Okay, now the business is out of the way. Let's have some fun. I have author and DJ himself, Tony Duchesne, in the studio. He's going to introduce himself now.
It's all business.
It's all business.
It's all business in the end. I have a product to sell, and it's a novel. You know, they call it a property now.
Property.
Yeah,
huh.
Like when I'm talking to film people, it's a property.
Oh yeah, I've heard of intellectual property stuff.
Well, we want to discuss your property. And I'm sitting there going, I don't own the book. Oh, you mean my novel, Confessions of a Teenage Jesus Jerk? Yes, I have property, and women take it to bed at night and read it naked, and they're reading my words naked, and my book is getting more play than I ever get in my whole life. Or they're in their underwear, or they're in their snuggies. You
know, but that goes along with the plight of the main character of the book. It seems like he's thinking about stuff a lot. But
his fantasies regarding women.
Yes.
The book's about me.
Well, why don't we identify the book first?
Yeah, let's identify the property.
Yes. So we can option it later.
Right. It's loosely based on my story of growing up a Jehovah's Witness in Millbrae. And Millbrae is right by the San Francisco airport. And it was in the 80s. Millbrae was not after the .com. It was a dreary, just cement dump where I lived. Uh-huh. And you know, as you got up the hill, then that's where like the richer people lived, and the grass got greener and the views got better. But I was on the bottom.
I'm going to interject here with two comments.
Yes.
I am going to interject with the title of the book, Confessions of a Teenage Jesus Jerk. And it has nothing whatsoever to do with Lydia Lunch. At least I'm halfway through and I haven't heard anything about Lydia Lunch. And,
yeah,
no, I'm just kidding.
It's
when I first heard the title, though, immediately my 80s weird rock obsessed brain went straight to Lydia Lunch, but it is a canard. It wasn't even an intentional canard.
What it is you and I both are, you know, we cross over the music and the literary scenes, and so we get the reference. But it was never meant to be a reference, and the literary scene is just like, what's a Lydia Lunch? So, and I'm sure the music scene is, what's a Tony Duchesne? So it doesn't matter.
Although you were once a DJ on this very...
Oh, I've DJed here. I've DJed at college radio. I DJ at clubs, yeah.
Yeah, we...
And okay. I dance in my underwear, and I use a hairbrush to sing.
Yeah, and you're going to be doing that in just a few minutes. I'll be describing it on air.
All right.
Okay, but also Millbrae. I'm a registered nurse, and I've been working. It's not technically Millbrae. It's at Mills Peninsula, which is in that area.
That's
so I've been getting
a
little taste. Oh wow!
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, well, they're going to tear where you were born down, and they've got a whole new fancy schmancy new hospital.
Really?
It's bigger and better, and it's got computer chips in every person's brain implanted. Every employee will have a computer chip implanted.
Oh, I want a chip. I want everyone to know where I'm going and what I'm doing and what I'm thinking about.
Yeah, that's the wave of the future, man.
Well, in Confessions of a Teenage Jesus Jerk, it's loosely based on a lot of the feelings and explorations I had when I was growing up a Jehovah's Witness teenager, and in the belief system. And I wrote it from the point of view of somebody in the belief system who doesn't think he's in the belief system. He believes he's in the truth. God is going to kill him in Armageddon for masturbating and thinking lustful thoughts. But, you know, there's a tenderness to him, too, because he's trying to get straight with God. But these women are beautiful, especially, you know, there's something going on at the we're in summer, and every weekend in the summer at the Cow Palace is the Jehovah's Witness District Convention. And I even dreamt about this. This is weird. I have erotic Jehovah's Witness dreams. I'm a mess. I dreamt I was making out with this like Ethiopian, like maybe Eastern African looking kind of woman. who was at, and she was at the district convention, and she had never kissed a guy before. And so I was like, well, let me kiss you, you know, and my dreams. But I had garlic last night. And so she was like, ew, is that garlic? And so that was kind of how my dream went. It went south from there. But this was
defeating yourself in your own fantasies. That is really scary.
I know.
That is the scariest part of that story.
And it was at a Jehovah's Witness district conventions, which are happening now. Because what they do during the day, they have Bible seminars all day. So it's all about, you know, they want to execute the authority of Jehovah's Witnesses. You know, we are the authority, where we are the path to God. Listen to us. And then, you know, if you do this, if you commit this sin, if you fondle breast, if you, you know, touch a vagina, you're going to die at Armageddon unless you call the elders and confess. And then during lunchtime, all these beautiful Jehovah's Witness girls who have been dolling themselves up for 2 hours to meet all the other Jehovah's Witness guys who have been dolling themselves up. It's kind of like a mating ritual.
It is. It is. And I love the way it's described in the book, where everybody has their little address books or their telephone number books.
Yeah.
And they just gather telephone numbers like, this is some great conquest to get this number.
Yeah.
But it sounds like that sort of fades after the event. You know, maybe a few phone numbers are actually followed up on, but it sounds like it just sits in this book for another year when you go and make your conquest once again or something.
Not really. I mean, not to disagree with what you read, but the experience I had was I wanted to show it's a very there's innocence to it too, and that there's innocence, then there's kind of like ignorance is bliss when you're in there, and you see these girls, and you're just caught up in, this is my future. I will be happy when I'm 18, and I can finally live in my parents' garage with my wife, and I can have a janitor job until we can have enough money to move out, but we can be having sex, and this is going to be great, and I cannot wait till I'm 18. And that's what I thought. And every girl that I, you know, kissed, it was just like off the hook. And I would set up, I would get phone numbers or I would get addresses. So addresses were a little easier because this is pre-internet. So I would meet a sister from Livermore congregation and we would send each other letters, but we don't have a car yet. So we started, you know, we would start our... You know, I had a good day today. And then all of a sudden it kind of drifts off to, and I love your blue eyes. And it's the stuff that makes your heart race, you know. And it's so even, you know, I wanted to, you know, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the Jehovah's Witnesses are absolutely bonkers. I'm so glad to be on this side of the belief system. But when you're in it, there are endearing parts to it, and you know, and it's a completely effed up religion, but society's effed up too. So I kind of wanted to make that point, that just throw somebody to being a Jehovah's Witness for 4 hours or 5 hours, however long it takes to read the book, and enjoy the ride of Gabe, who's just looking for happiness in a future wife. Yeah. And
well, I like when Gabe has an encounter with his cousin who is worldly, and she basically,
I love her,
like totally screws with him, like, you know, bares her breasts and, you know, gives him everything that he thinks he wants.
Yeah.
And then he has to go back and figure out how that actually wasn't a sin on his part.
Right.
Because he was forced to do the things that he really wanted to do. It's so convoluted.
Yeah.
The logic that he almost turns himself in. It almost sounds like he's on the verge of actually turning himself in.
Yeah.
And it's so bizarre to see that kind of machination where he's just completely struggling with desire versus guilt.
Right. Exactly. You hit the nail on the head. That's the kind of the theme of the whole book.
Yeah.
And, you know, in a kind of messed up love story, Also, yeah, I gave Gabe a couple of helpers. I gave him a cousin, Karen, and an uncle, Jeff.
Yeah.
And both of the, you know, it's those are the kind of the two things that, you know, even though they're helpers, they kind of aren't the greatest helpers, but it does expand his world a little bit. So it's it was a lot of fun to play with the interactions of, you know, especially with Karen. I mean, I love Karen. I loved creating that character and just going deeper and deeper into her. She has a great view of the world, but man, it's messing with Gabe's head through the whole thing, you know?
Yeah. And it's interesting how, it seems like he sort of like with this character, Jeff, too, who's not actually, he's trying to get back, or he's actually being converted.
He's conflicted.
He's sort of going back and forth. He might be in, he might be out, but he's an old rock and roll guy and he has this old life and he's thinking that he wants to walk away from it, but he's not really walking away from it exactly. And
right.
He's back and forth and sort of playing that out with Gabe. But it seems like Gabe takes every chance he can get to do all this cool stuff that is total sin. And then it's only after he does things that he starts to think about, oh, I just sinned and maybe this means something. And then he tries to talk himself out of it and rationalize. But it seems like the first impulse is just to go for it. You know, this is, you know, it's almost like the taboo is what drives him wildly toward this stuff, toward drinking and, you know, experimenting with different stuff.
Right, right. Exactly.
Because he could say no at any given point. He could have walked away from his cousin and said, you know, hey, cover up, I'm not into this. But he doesn't.
No. He liked the drink that she made for him. And well, she already made it. I mean, she already took it out of his parents' liquor cabinet. So he's busted anyway if they find out.
Right.
You know, the subtext. Why not go ahead and have the drink? She's already screwed me over. You know,
but it's very self-serving at the same time. Like he gets to do what he wants and he gets off the hook completely, which is very, very nice the way he does that.
Well, you'll see if he gets off the hook or not.
Oh, I'm only halfway through. So yeah. I should preface by saying that.
Yeah. He justifies himself, which is actually a theme of Jehovah's Witnesses in general, is they justify their actions pretty amazingly. Mm-hmm. Where they'll do the sickest things, and then I'm not saying the sickest things, but they'll go see a rated R movie like they're not supposed to go see it,
right?
And then they won't tell anybody, and then they'll justify it, and then or other people will tell on them, and then they'll have to confess to the elders how bad it was that they went, and how, you know, they feel repentant now, and there's a lot of BS. You know, it's almost like Congress.
Yeah, it's really crazy that there's this dichotomy within the religion of, oh, we want to save people and we want to have everybody join, but at the same time, it's like, if you don't follow every rule to the letter, we're going to kick you out.
No, exactly. And it's the slow join. I mean, they bring you in, and then all of a sudden, you start to realize the deeper layers, and then you start to, and then they want to isolate you. And that was one of the other themes too, especially growing up. There's two different things. Growing up in it, you are very isolated and in the Jehovah's Witness community. So when you do get older and want to experiment and you get kicked out, you've lost everything. Your family, you know, it's you, and you think God's going to kill you at Armageddon. I left over 10 years ago, and up until, you know, 3 years of like heavy cognitive behavioral therapy, I one day I had a realization, oh my God, every once in a while I still think God is going to kill me at Armageddon. It's the belief system is just pops
but
up.
it's so weird that there was one passage that completely blew me away where Gabe is talking, he's going out on his whatever, where he's trying to knock on doors and convert people deal, which he does half-heartedly. But then he has it's sort of this weird vengeance thought in the back of his brain. People who have better houses than him or whatever, he's like, well, if they don't convert to Jehovah's Witness when Armageddon comes, I'm going to be able to live in their house. So, them. And I'm going to get all their cool stuff.
Well, that's actually a lot of... when I used to go out preaching, mm-hmm. and I was knocking on doors in Millbrae. I may have knocked on your door, listeners. Yeah, no, I was a Saturday morning. My dad had my buttocks out in my suit and tie. Made me very unpopular in high school with my Bible in hand and my watchtower and awake. But actually, Gabe in the book, Gabe's not the one who says that. It's somebody who he's preaching with that says that.
Oh, okay.
I didn't want Gabe to say that. I wanted
the
Looney sister to go, I can't wait until after Armageddon when we can come and live in these houses in Hillsboro.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and that's a very normal thing to say when you're out in service, when you're preaching. There's just that weird passive-aggressive mentality. And they're just knocking on doors, and they want to, you know... It's so routine, and it's so just ingrained that they don't even think about... For me, like the last few years I was in, and they were like trying to get me out, you know, they're like, you're not doing enough preaching, Brother Duchesne. And so I'd go out and preach. I would only just read a Bible scripture and leave.
Uh-huh.
And people would be like, what are you doing? You're supposed to give the watchtower an awake. And I'm just sitting there in my head thinking, well, the watchtower's writing is crap. You know, and
I love the drawings though. Those drawings of like the idyllic, you know, animals and people hanging out, and it looks so nice. There's something alluring. There's something, I don't know, that repels and attracts me to it in equal measures.
And then there's the apocalyptic illustrations of, you know, the people who are not Jehovah's Witnesses getting killed and, you know, sucked away at Armageddon.
Oh, I haven't seen those.
Oh, yeah. Those are fun. You gotta look online.
I think I did see a few online, actually, but I never saw them in the magazines.
Yeah.
The magazines are only good for these, you know, pleasant, happy scenes.
You know, they may be lighting up on the doom and gloom of the... I don't know. I have been out for so long.
Yeah, I think so. I think they have a certain artist, or maybe it's just a style that they're really into, that's where everything's just kind of soft. It's sort of realistic and unrealistic at the same time. And it's sort of very old school. Yeah. It almost looks like drawings from the 40s or 50s.
Yeah.
But that they've got these weird, unbelievable scenes that don't really make any sense, but they look very alluring.
Yeah, well, it's because if you're not a Jehovah's Witness, if you're a Jehovah's Witness, everyone gets killed and you get to go have Paradise Earth and pet lions. I mean, that's the crux of it. You know, but the my novel, Confessions of a Teenage Jesus Jerk, is actually...
What was it? What was the
my
name?
Property?
My property. My property. It's not even product.
Yeah, my product. Actually, I think people get scared of it because they think it's going to be preachy in some way. Because Jehovah's Witness books that I've read are preachy, and I preached for so long. I'm sick of preachers. I despise them. I don't want to be a preacher myself. So the book was compared more to like Youth and Revolt by C.D. Payne and King Dork by Frank Portman. Those were the early publicity comparisons. So I just want to get that point out there that even though we're talking heavier themes, the narrative of the book does have a heavy theme, but it stays on a coming of age story in a dark comedic way.
And it's important. I remember talking with you before about how it was important that it not be a memoir, another memoir, because there's a million of those out there, and they tend to be, I don't know, I haven't read any of them personally myself, but I can imagine that they would be just sort of preachy at a certain point, like, you know, hey, the person has to say why they rejected all of that.
Right.
And probably gets emotional and personal in a way that maybe doesn't really... It doesn't give insight to somebody who doesn't know that stuff already.
Right.
Whereas your book, I find it's it's fascinating to read as somebody who knows, I know almost nothing about Jehovah's Witnesses, and especially nothing about the rules and the laws and the hierarchy and all that. I knew nothing about that coming into it. And the way that you present it, I have to sort it out myself. Like, does this make sense? Is this, you know, like some of it sounds kind of okay, but then some of it I'm not too sure about. And then I get to see it work out in practice in the character's life, in different characters' lives. And that's sort of how I figure out what's working, what's not working, what's actually sort of truthful, what's hypocritical. It's a lot to sort out, really.
Yeah, there's a I've received so many comments, which has been really great, where people finish the book and they're like, "Wow, I have to actually sit and think about this for a while." Katie Arnaldi, she wrote Chemical Blue, and she's got a new book out, Chemical Pink, and she's got a new book out called Point Doom. Mm-hmm. Right now, she's calling it her favorite, for Diesel Books, she did this interview, and they're like, mm-hmm. "What's your favorite book?" And she's like, "Confessions of a Teenage Jesus Jerk." And she got in touch with me, and she's just like,
"That's so great.
You had me crying. I don't know what, I have never read anything like this before. She's like, "I need to sit back and think about this for a while, and I have a lot of questions for you."
Woo, and we're going to sit back and listen to a public service announcement, because we're supposed to do that every half hour on the 15-minute mark. So.
Get into the business!
So listen up, people. This is important information for you to be public serviced by.
Unwanted Easter bunnies, Thanksgiving turkey escape artists, and a rooster named Puppy. Welcome to Harvest Home Animal Sanctuary, a leading Northern California rescue and relief organization for abused and neglected domestic and farm animals. Visit harvesthomeanimal.org to learn more about Harvest Home's life-saving work. This public service announcement was brought to you by your friends at Pirate Cat Radio San Francisco.
All right, we are back with...
That was a nice hug.
Yeah.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, it was all the better because you actually did get naked and started dancing around the studio.
Yeah.
So you've clearly given up your Jehovah's Witness background.
And all my dignity.
So I remember we had a discussion before where I sort of was talking about how it can be really interesting and difficult to write a novel that incorporates some of your own experience into it. And I kind of likened it to method acting, because that's the style of acting where you sort of feel the emotions of the character and you sort of find a place in your own experience, your own life, where you've been there and sort of draw that out of yourself. And that's kind of what I suspect is going on with a lot of the book, that it's definitely not autobiographical. It doesn't feel like an autobiography at all, but there is this experience, and there is a deep emotional connection that you have with the characters, obviously.
Oh yeah, no, definitely. I worked with them for 3 years, pulling the characters together. You know, there was drafts that were like 450 pages. You know, the book's now 214, but those drafts needed to be written in order for the character development to happen, and then pages become sentences that place at the right. You know, what do you call it? That's part of the writing process, but. Yeah. Yeah, it was hard because I had to respect everybody's belief system, all the characters I was writing. I had even the elder father of Gabe. I had to respect his beliefs. When I'm writing him, I am in him, and I have to respect that when he is drilling Gabe at the beginning of the book about because Gabe held hands with the girl, and Gabe is unsure if he's getting busted for it, and his father asks, "Did you touch her?" And there's a little miscommunication there, but I had to be in the father's head of trying to protect this his son from dying in Armageddon.
Yeah.
So being in the, you know, especially since I used to be in the belief system, it really messed me up writing some of these people. But, you know, I had to get in there and just be, you know, and really respect. I had to respect the religion all the way through. I couldn't be snarky about it. I can't be sarcastic about Gabe's belief system. I can't be sarcastic about Karen and, you know, what she does. I can't be sarcastic about, you know, Uncle Jeff and his touring Europe, you know, with Santana, but then trying to come to the Kingdom Hall and balancing his life of drugs. And because, you know, he was kind of a spiraling character too. So, you know, these characters are spiraling in different ways, and not all of them are Jehovah's Witnesses. So
yeah, it's an interesting interactions. And another thing that came to mind, it seems like there are some secrets that are revealed in the book, and I wonder if that was ever a concern of yours, that somehow that the secret Jehovah's Witness posse would get you in the night and say you.
Oh, I would love it. That's publicity. Publicity for my property of my novel Confessions of a Teenage Jesus Jerk. Yes.
But there are some serious, what come off as very serious, very deep secrets about the religion that I'm not sure how deep they are or whatever, but it was kind of shocking for me to actually come into contact with them. I almost felt like I'm reading stuff that I'm not supposed to be reading right now. And what if something happens to me? What if Armageddon comes down on my head all of a sudden?
Right. What if they're right? We are all dead. I mean, there is a chance. There is a chance, you know.
So it hasn't happened. But maybe you could orchestrate that, and that would increase the value of your property.
I
dress up like a Jehovah's Witness, and
I actually do dress like a Jehovah's Witness without the tie, actually. So for the most part, except my facial hair won't get me. I was thinking it'd be so cool to go to one of these district assemblies at the Cow Palace, you know, that they're doing.
Right.
And just look for the bad girls. Just kind of look and see where the bad girls are and just be like, hey, you know, I live in the city. You want to come down? You want to come drink with me in the mission?
Oh, wow.
Because, you know, it's ex-Jehovah's Witness girls. They are ready.
Yeah, they
well,
might be
the,
even more crazy.
The borderline ones, yeah.
They might even be crazy than the Catholic school girls.
Oh, yeah. Well, if they don't leave, then, you know, you're going to marry him and have missionary style sex without foreplay for the rest of your life. Well, I mean, for the first 2 years, and then you'll be just pooping out kids. So.
Wow. So
it's
that's Jehovah's Witness in a nutshell from Tony Duchesne.
Yeah, there's so many other layers to it. What I wanted to do in Confessions of a Teenage Jesus Jerk was just show the viewpoint from a kid growing up in it. So there, it doesn't nail, you know, a lot of themes that I would have liked to have tapped on. And I've put this is the end of the, you know, I'm not going to write about it anymore. My next book has nothing to do with it. And, you know, I was just, this was my closing the door on a time in my life that's kind of frustrating and yet fun in a weird way.
And this probably is the most sexy Jehovah's Witness related novel ever.
In its
weird way.
I like that.
It's sexy and yet scary. There's always this impending doom to the sex.
Right.
Kind of. I like the fact that there's a scene of him watching Fast Time at Ridgemont High, because there is that horrible scene where I forget the character is caught masturbating.
Oh, Judge Ryan.
Yeah. And, you know, just audible gasps in the theater when I heard that.
Yeah, essentially that scene is the whole book.
It is.
But it's not the masturbation, but just like the cringing of different. I put Gabe through hell. And he doesn't even get all the hell I got when I was a kid. I had to pull back a little bit just to keep the humor there and keep it light yet heavy. You know, my theme in writing is it's a sad and beautiful world, and That's it.
That's good. That's yeah. And we will leave on that note. This is the end of the Punk Prescription Show. Thanks to my guest, Tony Duchesne.
Yeah,
for
I have a
in.
Property.
And he has a property Talk ready to be
property.
Optioned. So if you want to call 415-341-1199, you could do a deal right here on the air if you wish.
Yeah, no, no. My agent will kill me. It's www.jesusjerkjob.com for any of that stuff.
Right. And you can find it in all fine booksellers, maybe even signed copies here and there.
Yeah, in San Francisco, I go around and sign copies here and there. Barnes & Noble across the United States, they've been very good to me.
Right on. Thanks a lot for coming. Thanks a lot for listening.
Yeah, thank you.